Shireen Gourbani here, and you are listening to a very special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle. We actually have two individuals who are representing sort of the ethos of the show, the spirit of the show. I am joined by Representative Grant Miller on the left and Representative Tyler Clancy on the right. And they are going to share a little bit about their journey into politics, their shared commitments around some issues, and I think you're going to enjoy the conversation. So welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having us. It's exciting to be on the show.
I'm so glad to be here.
Happy to have you. So I'll start with you. Can we do first names? What do you like?
That's great.
Okay.
That's great.
Tyler, tell me a little bit about your journey into politics.
Well, I don't think my journey into politics was too different or exciting than anyone else. I consider myself just a normal guy who worked in different campaigns. And to quote my good friend, Representative Ashley Matthews, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Yeah. And recognizing that civic engagement is so important about anything you care about, from sports to health policy and criminal justice. So I recognized pretty early on that it touched every sphere of life that I cared about. And so I just wanted to be engaged and had some exciting opportunities, you know, to run for office and different things like that. But nothing particularly exciting. I consider myself just right in the middle there as just a normal guy.
So tell me what your district looks like. Where is it? And when did you start serving?
Absolutely. So my district, I began running for the seat in 2022 at the end. It was a special election. It's House District 60. It's in Provo, Utah. It's about 12 square blocks. It's pretty small because it's dense. It's kind of the urban core of Provo. A lot of BYU students, actually the median voter in House District 60 is 26 years old. So I'm actually old for the district there.
So. Well, and this is radio. So can you share? Are you willing?
I'm 28. So yeah, getting so up there.
This is an unusual, I would say, representation here because it's a fairly young cross-section of the body. We have a lot of older individuals serving in our legislature, and you both stand out in terms of your age. Grant, tell us a little bit about you. What was your journey into politics? Where do you serve? A little bit about your background.
A little bit about my background. I'm a public defender, which kind of informs a lot of what I do in the legislature and how I wound up in the legislature. Out of law school, I got into indigent defense pretty quickly. I was in private practice
and
for a little bit.
What is indigent defense?
Sorry, that's a very technical legal term for being a public defender. Mm-hmm. If you can't afford one, you're considered indigent by the court, and the court says, here's your lawyer. Same kind of thing in the movies. Or in real life, you get Mirandized. If you can't afford a lawyer, one will be appointed to you, and then you wind up with me.
Yeah.
You still wind up with me. And I got involved in doing that work because I cared about helping people in vulnerable situations. Believed that, a lot of people who need lawyers the most can't afford them.
Yeah.
And if you have that skill set, you need to afford it to people who really need some of the most help in the court system. So I started working there, and I did what I could in the courts, and I realized that some of the bigger levers, some of the problems with the system were bigger than what you could deal with in the courts, and that some bigger solutions were necessary. So I started looking at the state legislature.
Yeah.
And threw my hat into the ring with hopes of nothing more than and bringing some issues to light through a campaign, but was lucky enough to have a successful campaign, and now I work in the state legislature.
Wonderful. And then you're also in a super urban area. You're in Salt Lake City.
Correct.
Yeah. And about how far south does that go?
Oh, so I am in between 4th South and I-80. I'm kind of framed by those two thoroughfares.
So right in the, almost in the heart of the city.
Oh, I know some of my colleagues who represent Salt Lake City as well take issue with this, but I say I represent the best part of Salt Lake City. I got Liberty Park, Trolley Square, Ballpark, all the best parts when you're swimming by the downtown.
So you serve in legal defense, the world that you're in. And Tyler, you're on a different side of this when we think about the public. Can you talk a little bit about your day job?
Sure. I'm a detective with the Provost City Police Department. Prior to that, I was a patrol officer. And so what's interesting is, I do think a lot of times we see it as, side A and side B. But really, as Representative Miller and I have talked at length about some of these issues, and I think 99% of the public is trying to solve the problem in whatever manner that looks like.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we find a lot of common ground, particularly in just the ethos and the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish by helping our communities heal and safer neighborhoods for everyone.
So I know you both have some shared priorities when it comes to the legislative agenda. And as listeners tune into this episode, we'll be right on coming up into our legislative session. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the things that you're working on or things that you're excited about?
There's a lot there, but certainly when it comes to shared interests, you'd think that between being a police officer and a public defender, we'd be at each other's throats on the House floor, and that's not true at all. One of my closest friends and colleagues on the House floor is Representative Clancy, and we have a lot of shared interests, particularly when we're dealing with issues of homelessness and the unhoused community and the ways to effectively find solutions. One thing I really admire about Representative Clancy, he won't be with us very much longer. He's moving on up, and he's going to be dealing with the unhoused situation statewide for the state. And I can't think of anyone better suited to sort of take that job by the horns. Representative Clancy is a compassionate individual and a really sharp guy that I'm going to miss in the legislature that listens to all sides and doesn't just listen, but takes that into real consideration to find some real solutions.
Yeah, wonderful. Would you like to provide praise to your colleague?
I'm just kidding.
That's very sweet, Grant. But talk about some of the places where you might be thinking about legislation or just priorities heading into the legislative session.
Oh, such a good question. And thank you, Representative, for your kind words. I mean, I would say, kind of going back on my original point, is that so many times, you know, when we think about this criminal justice system, 99% of the people will actually agree on what they want to see when someone enters the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
And this is, if someone needs mental health care, I want them to get the treatment that they need.
Yeah.
If someone's addicted to drugs, I want them to help get off that path without hanging what I call the scarlet F of a felony record over their head and knowing that that's going to cause challenges further down the road. And then obviously, if someone is truly a danger to the community, they want that person to be incapacitated, be away from the community. And so the question for us is to say, how do we make our system follow that common sense? And that's easier said than done. And so we've been working on one of the models that has been taking a lot of energy in this space is the Swift, Certain, and Fair model. And Jennifer Doliak with Arnold Ventures has done a lot of research about this. But this is making sure that people feel confident that when they enter the system, the consequences are going to be fair, it's going to be swift, and they can expect what's going to happen. And this allows individuals to get off of that kind of spiraling path that they're on without necessarily going through the carceral process. And so there's a lot of broad agreement. It's a big Venn diagram, I think, that we're working on, but there's just a few of the things that I think you're going to see coming up in January.
Nice. So, Grant, I want to ask, and I'll ask you both this, but I think people feel often disconnected from their representation. We hear that Utahns don't feel like they're really represented by the legislature. Can you talk a little bit about what it means, or from your side of things, how good collaboration communication works with your constituents? Like, what do you recommend that people do? How do you recommend they get in touch with you? Like, how can you give an example of like a good community connection where you've been able to learn about something, work on something because of that outreach?
Absolutely. I will say this right now. I take a lot of effort to get back to everyone who reaches out to me. If you send me an email, I'm going to send you an email back. If you call me, I'm going to call you back. And if you hand write a letter, I will hand write a letter back. You got to give me some time because I got a lot of things between the legislature and being a public defender. But I do get my vibe check, if I can say that on a podcast. My vibe check with my constituency comes from that communication.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes blind spots that you have when you're in a session. It's kind of this bubble, and you don't always have that direct line that you normally have when you're directly plugged in the community. You depend on your constituents to communicate with you directly.
Yeah.
Text messages, phone calls. I've had people walk into my office at work, come to my house even, and chat with me about what issues mean the most to them that I didn't necessarily see, and I could prioritize that. So get in touch with me. Don't necessarily come to my house, but you could call, text, come to my office.
Yeah.
Please do that.
Or send a handwritten note. I like it. Tyler, talk to me a little bit about how what maybe advice you have for people to engage with their legislator.
Definitely. And I think it's just a principle generally that lack of proximity creates division. And so many times I think I've seen where I always hear the quote, you know, people hate the legislature or they hate Congress,
yeah.
but they love their representative
yeah.
or their legislator. And I think a lot of that is because of proximity, is that you can say, well, I actually wrote Grant a letter. He doesn't agree with me, but he wrote me a letter back, and I can tell he's a good guy, he's working hard, et cetera. Those are the kinds of things where I think the more that we can get in the same room with people, whether that's I try to host a town hall every month in Provo, breaking bread together. And you'd be surprised, a lot of people that come to my events, they come because they don't agree with me. But more often than not, when we have these conversations, we break bread together and get in the same room, that proximity can build those connections that I think are fruitful when it comes to decision making time. And we can lean on those relationships you've created.
That's right. So I'll just advise listeners. I know we have a very informed listenership, but you can go to le.utah.gov. You're able to look up by your address who your representative is in the House and then also in the Senate. And right there on that page, when you click through, is the contact email. There is an address there. If you do want to send a note, you can do that. And also a phone number. And you can reach out directly to your representation. And I think it's really important to do that. I always recommend to people the best time to do that is probably not early January or in the legislative session, but to build those relationships throughout the year. It's a part-time legislature, but you do serve and respond throughout the year. So we will take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more specifically about the issue of housing, homelessness, and unhoused individuals in our community. This is Shireen Gourbani, and I'm joined by Representative Grant Miller and Representative Tyler Clancy. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hello, this is Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to a special episode of Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Representative Tyler Clancy and Representative Grant Miller, representing the left and the right, currently serving in our state legislature, both with really interesting backgrounds and I think a shared commitment around a humane, a dignified, a productive approach to addressing homelessness in our state and in our communities. So, Grant, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit as a public defender about how homelessness, how unhoused individuals, how the entire kind of breakdown of that system shows up in your work?
It's a great question because there's a lot of overlap. And homelessness appears in many different ways. You don't necessarily have to be living on the street or a park bench to be homeless. You could be couch surfing. You could be living out of your car. You could be in between jobs and you just don't have a formal place to live. But in all those categories, a lot of times you get swept up into the criminal justice system. And the deeper into poverty you are, the easier it is to get caught in that net. And a lot of times it's as easy as picking up a whole bunch of trespassing tickets for being at the park too late, and it just turns into a warrant because, you missed court. A lot of times it's really difficult. If you ride tracks without a ticket because you can't afford one, you could miss court and get a warrant for that. You could have a whole bunch of outstanding tickets because tracks goes throughout the entire county, which spans dozens of different justice courts. You miss one, you get a warrant out for your arrest, and you're, boom, in the system. So dealing with my clients, particularly with misdemeanors, a lot of my clients are unhoused, but even with felonies, a lot of these have nexus to drug cases. Drug cases are enhanceable. And so if you have drugs on multiple occasions, you wind up in the felony system and you're in state court. A lot of what I do is work with social workers and work with community members to figure out long-term stabilization plans.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trauma if you've been living on the streets, and that trauma isn't necessarily immediately helped by moving in and out of the carceral system.
Right.
And the trick is finding an off-ramp at some point so that way you have long-term stabilization. So that way you don't wind up going back to the streets or to the Maverick across the street from the jail, but that you actually have a place to land, a place that we trust that can have wraparound services for a long-term chance at you becoming productive and self-stabilizing.
Yeah.
Easier said than done. But that's what we're all trying to find answers to and trying to streamline resources towards.
Yeah. So, Tyler, you are in what is for now you're heading into your last session, because at the end of this session, you will step down from the legislature and start a new role. But we first met when you were working in a little bit of similar work. So Tell me about your journey into this role. And for listeners who have been with us a long time, last year we had Wayne Niederhauser, who was here and talked about homelessness services. And that is the role that you are stepping into. So give us a little bit about the journey and the work that you've been doing in this space.
Well, to build on what Representative Miller said, homelessness is so much more than that word. I think it's just a big umbrella, and sometimes it doesn't really accurately describe what individuals are going through. So how did I get into this work? I think, once again, not being too different than a lot of people my age, I saw particularly the drug crisis and the nexus to homelessness very acutely with friends and family members and also community members. I think too many times we say, well, there's us and then there's the homeless. But there before the grace of God go I, as Representative Miller talked about, that the individuals who are experiencing homelessness, they are not only our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, et cetera, but if you get into a lot of these rooms, so many times it's actually the people at the table, and we don't even know that. I think when we're looking at solutions and we're trying to work in this space, one of the hardest things to find is this balance, the right amount of pressure, because addiction is very intense.
Yeah.
When someone's on the street, as you mentioned, living on a park bench, living in a park, going from place to place, getting moved along by police, and they're in the thralls of fentanyl or meth addiction, it can be very tough. So you look at historically where, you know, long sentences for drug possession or whatever it might be. Then you see a shift in 2016 to 2021. You know, take Portland, for example. They passed a proposition called Proposition 110 and decriminalized drug use and drug possession. And they officers actually just gave out tickets with a hotline on it. Yeah. Well, there was never that correct amount of pressure to get people into the treatment that we all agree that's the right path, and that's where people are going to heal. This is something Dr. Keith Humphreys, actually President Obama's drug czar, talked about. And so one of the things that we're really focused on this legislative session, I'm sure it's going to continue, is what is that balancing point where we're not taking that hardcore libertarian approach of saying, I don't care what you do. Go and suffer on the street. And unfortunately, as we know, the number one cause of death right now for homeless Utahns is a fatal drug overdose. That's not okay. And at the same time, what do we do to help people get on that path of healing? That's the tough questions that we're trying to take on. And it's going to take all hands on deck, all different perspectives. And I think people would be surprised about how many people that disagree are in the room together constantly talking about these issues, not always leaving the room in agreement, but making, I would say, that forward progress that we need.
Yeah. So you are stepping into the role to lead this for the state here at the end of the legislative session. When I think about it, I'm a pretty regular volunteer in the space. I do the unsheltered nights at there's a church here in Salt Lake City that opens up too, actually. And I'm down there pretty frequently whenever I can be, actually, and also have, I would say, sort of a different perspective on it from serving in county government, where counties are often a place where a lot of the resources are pulled together, and then also where there's a huge cost around public safety. So when I was at Salt Lake County, I think it was like something over 80% of the budget was really allocated to public safety. So that could be the jail, public defenders, district attorney, like the whole system that wraps around that. And this is something that's personal to me, too. Right. My father is an immigrant to this country, struggled with addiction, spent time on the streets, all like in shelters. All of that felt really like something that as a family member to it, it feels so systematically impenetrable. You know, like it's hard to figure out what to do. I often say it's really expensive to be poor in this country. It's really expensive to get into these systems and difficult to navigate out. I'm wondering if you could think about one lever that you would pull, one place where you would put pressure, a place where you would love to see the state put a little bit of extra energy. And it can be maybe a little outside of the box that we're talking about here. What would you like to see in terms of priorities or resources that you think could disrupt how many folks are ending up on our streets and dealing with addiction?
Just one?
Or just maybe something you would love to.
I know you have some good ones.
Yeah. See extra attention to.
Well, the one of my favorite quotes is you can't attain an answer to such a complicated question through one pathway.
Yeah.
If there was a single answer to our homelessness crisis, I'd like to think that we would have been able to find it by now. This is an issue that will always need more and more resource. And I don't know if we could ever get to a point where we could give it the resource that it truly deserves.
Yeah.
But, you know, to give you an example, in my district, there are two shelters. And the road homes in my district, and when I toured the road home, I was really surprised to go to the kitchen. And the reason being is it's got this beautiful industrial kitchen. It's all brand new, and it's never been used. And the reason why it's never been used is they don't have the ongoing funding to staff that kitchen. And so they truck in meals that are made elsewhere. And it's just an example of where the desire is there. The vision is there. But the ability to pony up, it's hard. Being a state legislator, looking at the budget of the state, realizing just how shoestring everything is, makes you realize how scarce resources are, and finding answers become all the more difficult when you can't fund them. So I guess if there was one lever, it would be resources.
Yeah. How about for you?
I totally hear that. And I'll kind of try and find something in the same vein. As we've discussed, homelessness is a very complex and diverse issue. And I think our system should reflect that.
Yeah.
And too many times we get caught in because if we're spending a lot of time downtown, we're going to talk about homelessness in the context of unsheltered homelessness. We're going to talk about homelessness in the context of drugs, in the context of crime, in the criminal justice system. But there's a lot of people who are experiencing homelessness that we're never going to meet because they're actually not even interacting with the formal homelessness system. They're just experiencing economic hardship or instability in their lives. And so they're kind of in this up and down flow piece there. And so making sure our system recognizes the diversity that we all can see. I think one thing that you're going to see me focus on in this new role is I really want to learn from people with lived experience,
Yeah. Bring
them into the office. I think one piece that's interesting is if you talk to someone who is in active use in addiction and you say, what do you need? They usually tell me, leave me alone. Give me a key to an apartment. And, you know, that's what I need. Just stop bothering me. When you talk to someone in recovery who with that lived experience, they're going to say, I needed someone to never give up on me.
Yeah.
And to don't cut me loose the first time I make a mistake, but please don't give up on me, hold me accountable, and I need someone to tell me that was worth it. We can't just look at that and say, oh, that's a great idea and move on. We need to make sure our policies reflect that lived experience and that lived experience of recovery. And that's just something I'm hoping to work on.
Yeah, that really speaks to me. When I ran for Congress, which feels like 100 years ago, but was about 10, I held a town hall at Switchpoint in St. George. And specifically, you know, wanted to hear from folks who were living in the shelter, who were interfacing with that organization. And it was transformative. It was a really incredible experience. And I think that you will find lots of folks who are really grateful to have someone take that time and listen. And I do agree with you when you mentioned that our system needs to be as diverse as the experience. That's critical. And I think that's what we're talking about when we say, like, okay, it could be somebody couch surfing, staying mm-hmm. with family. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for them to take that next step into stabilization as opposed to somebody who is sleeping under a tarp in a community park, right? So as we're starting to get to the end of the episode, I'm just wondering if there are any last thoughts on either of these issues or advice you have to Utahns as we kind of head into a new year?
I would just kind of build on that last message. Something that Representative Miller and I talk about often is that we should never give up, as hard and as daunting as these challenges are, and approaching it from different angles and different sides and different opinions. That's the one thing, is we can never throw in the towel, because the people who these policies impact are way too important for us to give up. So it can get hard. It can get daunting. It can be a lot. And I think it can be a lot for people to handle and to kind of that Don Quixote-esque feeling. But that's my New Year's message, is stay in the fight. We need you wherever you are in the spectrum or in the system. Stay engaged, and we're going to keep working together.
Go ahead.
For me, it's about maintaining that positive discourse. Obviously, me and Representative Clancy have that. And I hope that we can we can share that and spread it. Yeah. I really miss when politics was kind of boring, when you wouldn't pull out your phone and wouldn't just kind of get filled with anxiety. And I think that that's relatable to everyone on all sides of the aisle. There's a certain amount of collaboration that is necessary for governance. And like when we talk about difficult issues, the homelessness, you get in the nitty gritty and there's quite a bit to argue about.
Yeah.
But the trick is recognizing that some people are trying to find difficult answers to difficult problems. And whenever you come up with a solution, everyone else is going to be quick to tell you why you're obviously wrong about why you proposed it. But as my dad always said, it's easier to throw hand grenades than it is to catch them. Collaborative effort in politics is necessary, and it's hoping that we can, into the new year, keep that momentum and continue to work together.
Yes, I love both of these messages. Thank you both for your time today. I really appreciate it. I love sharing your perspectives and your backgrounds with our listeners. Again, if take them up on the offer. Engage with your representation. Go to le.utah.gov. Look up who represents you. Be in touch with them throughout the session. I'm grateful to all of you, our listeners. I'm Shireen Gorbani. I've been joined by Representative Grant Miller and Representative Tyler Clancy. And the program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you so much.